phone lines lit up like Malzahn at a craft beer house, like Adam Crowley at Mountaineer Field, like Pony at the Carrier Dome.
At the Syracuse game, yeah.
Like Bob at another speaking engagement.
Bob, right, where Bob? Would you be lighting up at?
Let's go.
The Christmas tree lighting for Light Up Night this weekend?
At an Elvis impersonation contest, perhaps?
No, we have the Partners for Quality. It's a very nice event, and that's my charity of choice for our golf tournament for all these years. And yeah, Elvis impersonations do come out at that. A couple French martinis open up the door.
By the way, Bob, now that we're somewhat tied at the hip, are you going to get me into a lot of golf tournaments where we can miss work together?
Yeah.
Please?
Yeah, that could actually work out.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Plus, a lot of golf tournaments where we can do the show from the tournament.
No.
Why?
No, I'll say a stern no on that one. Because I want to play golf, don't you? You don't want to be, what are you going to?
No, that's the beauty of it. You have an early tee time, you do half the show, then I have a tee time, and I do half the show, or something.
I don't know. That may be tough to pull off.
All right, well, let's get to the phones. There's a couple coaches who, if they're not on the hot seat by any reasonable and rational thought process, should be, at least on the hot seat. And that's Pat Narduzzi and Mike Sullivan. Limits, please.
Start with Ken in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Ken.
Hey, how you guys doing? Hi, Joe. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
What's up, Ken?
I don't know. He did a great job when he had the players to do it, but from my recollection, he was fired in Boston after 2 years. Couldn't get a job as a head coach anywhere else. He was our minor league coach and got called up. He comes up here and does the exact same thing at this point with that Bylsma did, and Bylsma got fired.
No, let's be fair here. He won twice as many cups as Bylsma.
Yeah, yes, I agree. But I'm talking in reference to, Bylsma wouldn't change the system, wouldn't do anything different, played this guy's the same way. And, these guys that are out there, they lose 6-1 with, four or five guys that Dubas signed that stink. And what? The rookies, what are we going to lose? 7-1?
I think there's a distinct difference. Well, some of these guys aren't ready to play, and you can be messing them up by bringing them up if they're not ready to play. I think if Rutger McGroarty was able to play and they thought he could, he should be up here by now. He started the season, but they found out maybe he wasn't ready to play. It's taken Sam Poulin too long to be up here, but he's finally here. Who knows what that will develop into. I think the difference is, back then, to your point, in the Bylsma situation, this core group was still very young, and I think they just didn't like the direction of, and it showed on the ice. Like, they were maybe playing that way. This is different in that this group, I don't think they can play the way they think they can play. And I think they overestimated all of these extensions, thinking they still can make, and they're still good players, don't get me wrong, but they're not the level they once were, and you need a support cast. And to me, the way you got the support cast is by not signing them to extensions. I'm talking about Malkin and Letang. They chose to sign them, and now here we are.
Well, he talked about Sullivan and how he won't change systems, and we can talk about that all day. Sully will rage against that. Fine. You can talk X's and O's all you want. Here's what we know. And again, this is not an opinion, it's fact. You preach you want a team that's hard to play against, they're easy to play against, mm-hmm. in every respect. You preach against puck mismanagement, that's all they do is mismanage the puck. Nobody has more odd man breaks against them than the Penguins. Everything he preaches, they do the opposite of. And you don't need talent to do some of that stuff. You don't really need talent to protect 2-goal leads. You should be able to get a bunch of muckers in here. And if you give them a 2-goal lead, they'll be able to finish a game. They don't do that because they don't do what their coach is telling them to do on many, many different levels. So that's something that Sully cannot argue, that whatever he's preaching, they're not doing.
And a lot of that is like just mismanaging situations that you just discussed. If you're going to pinch on a play, you got to make sure you have somebody back protecting you if you are a defenseman who decides to come in. That's part of his system. He likes aggressive defensemen, but they can only be done when you have someone covering for you on the backside. And if you don't, obviously, at least odd man breaks into their goaltending, not as good as it should be. Now you got all kinds of problems.
Next. And
let's go to Steele in Pittsburgh. Wants to talk about the Penguins.
Hello, Steele.
What's up, guys?
Steele.
You tell
us. Is
that
your real name, Steele, or is that your nickname?
That's my alter ego.
Okay.
You know, in case they say something bad, I don't want to get in trouble at work.
This sounds very interesting, Bob.
So, you know, looking at this from a business standpoint, you know, you guys are talking about the Garden Group thinking they got themselves in a bad spot. But, you know, the thing is, having Crosby there and Malkin and these other guys, I mean, they're going to get attendance. I mean, I know it's going down, but they're still going to have people just coming there. And ultimately,
yeah, but that's a dangerous slope to go on. And quite frankly, I was surprised Sydney was on $599 looking for $600 for three games or so. And that crowd should have been packed.
I'll add this before we throw it back to you, is that they have the third biggest attendance drop in all of hockey. But go ahead.
I get it. But here's the thing. You want to lose right now. I mean, it's time. You know, what you don't want to do, I don't think, is, you know, I think Crosby can be there for another 3, 4, 5 years. You know, Lemieux was here when they went bad, right? I mean, Lemieux was here when they got high draft picks, and that's when the baton was tossed. So what I'm saying is you don't want to just completely devalue the franchise and get rid of, say, Crosby or these guys right now. You want to lose. You want to get a really high draft choice. You want to get the Carlson contract off the books, and now you can go to work.
Yeah, but how do you do that?
Now,
how do you get all this money away, you know? I mean, you're talking about they need some room to spend some money. Do they have some dead contracts
they're
playing to?
They got on the books for 2 more years, which was a really bad idea, even though they got rid of some of those other contracts just for the 1 year. But it's going to come off. I mean, it's going to – hey, give it 2 years. I know that sounds crazy, but you want to actually do really bad. You want to get a couple of lottery picks, and that's the way to infuse the team. There's no other way to do it. You got to lose. I mean,
what if I tell you that Sid wouldn't want that? What would you do?
I don't think Sid is going to have a say. I mean, if they're losing, they're going to get a high pick. You know, I mean, unless they could turn it around, the only say he has is if they win.
No, the other say he has is if he stays or he goes. So if your choice would be to completely ransack it and go to the bottom, which they're there anyway, by the way.
I don't think Crosby... knowing his, you know, his idiosyncrasies and his way of thinking, I don't think he ever plans on leaving the Penguins.
All right. My thought is he took yet another major discount because he thinks they're still going to try and win. But maybe I'm wrong. Thank you for the call, though. It was actually very well thought out, Bob, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, these are all decisions that have got to be made. And where they go from here will be predicated on how well these decisions are made.
They're next. Not.
Go ahead.
Matt in the Meadowlands wants to talk about Pitt and Narduzzi.
Matt.
Hello, Matt.
Dr. Starkey, I just couldn't sit by and let Jim for Jefferson besmirch you.
Man.
And let me just say.
Hold on a second. All, do you have any interplayed with Jim from Jefferson on which one was right?
No,
limits?
Not.
Not,
no.
not.
Not.
You would.
Smart ass.
Couldn't really get a good cut of the clip, Joe, because
right.
You were talking over Mr. Jim.
That's all right. Go ahead, sir.
Well, for starters, throwing out your season ticket credentials, it makes you look worse because you sat, besides that ACC championship year, you sat there and watched, what, like you said, pretty much mediocrity for most of the time. You're showing up at the stadium just to get slapped in the face and you show up again and you smile and you take it. Like, enough with the excuses. I don't know if it's feasible financially to do something, but I'm sick of the excuses. Like Bob had mentioned, SMU, they were down to their third receiver against Pitt. Rhett Lashley, is he using that as an excuse? No. They went out and boat raced Pitt.
Yep, everybody has injuries. If you're going to use that as a reason why they're struggling, come on.
Let's take one more.
Let's go to Mike and Moon.
Mike and Moon. Hello, Mike.
Hey, hello. Hey, thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
See, I just want to ask you, when I was looking at Pitt and Narduzzi, especially when they hit California, do you think that the team itself offensively was hitting its peak stride there? and that by that time, teams were starting to figure out kind of the one-dimensional offense of Holstein and Reed. I know Bartholomew is a good tight end, but they seem to be kind of stuck on that one aspect of offense. And also, do you think that Pitt, especially against Louisville, just gave up, especially in the second half with the defense? And it seems like when I read in the papers that Narduzzi was clearing his bench to let anybody play.
Bob?
And it just seemed like it was kind of a disgrace.
Well, to your comment about Holstein and Reed, they use him a lot. But there's no excuse for wide receivers dropping balls all over the place. There were a lot of those in that Louisville game. There have been a lot throughout the course of the season. And a lot of them have come in big downs for them. So their wide receiving core has not been very good. I expected more from them. As far as that game getting out of control, I just think their plan was awful. They didn't do anything in the first two quarters to indicate that they were strategically ready for what they saw in Louisville. And so that's the only conclusion I can make. They fell behind so fast, so quickly, it's like they had no idea what was hitting them. And again, that falls on your head coach and your staff. If they're not doing it, Joe, what else could it be? I mean, they've shown they can be competitive with some of these teams. Maybe not SMU, maybe not Louisville. But Louisville just came off a bad loss to Stanford, and they've been average at times. Yet they got just boat raced early in that game, almost as if they didn't have any idea what was hitting them.
This is a disaster, Bob. That's what I think.
And the Virginia loss was the worst of them all, because it's one thing to lose, you know, to SMU the way they did. Okay, the SMU did what it had to do. We came home to Virginia and still have a pretty good opportunity, and they were flat as can be on that one.
Meanwhile, as we move on here, how about the Jets? The story from Rich Cimini. They're employing Mike Tannenbaum to help them with their coach and GM searches, Bob. This is a guy that Woody Johnson fired as the GM.
That's how
now he's got him helping him to pick the next coach and GM. What kind of joke is that organization? No wonder they've gone the longest in the whole AFC without making the playoffs.
Did you see where Aaron Rodgers may want to continue to play, but not with the Jets now?
Ugh. Who would have
Who
him
would
at
have
this
him?
Point?
He is, yeah, no way. That ship has sailed. He's 40 and ain't going to get any better.
You know who Daniel Jones would look good on right away, right now, like next week if Brock Purdy can't play? The Niners.
Well,
Daniel Jones could go in there and be really good for them.
They were one of several teams interested in him. And, I think that guy still has a lot of potential. I just think their system there, and he was, he was bad with some of his throws, but he has a lot of talent. And you see Sam Darnold in a different system, what it's done for him.
He's a big Sam Darnold guy.
Look at Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield.
9-2, baby.
Yeah, that was that whole division, man. They have some really good teams in that division.
Let's take a little trip around the NFL and another look, like we spent the first couple of hours, on Steelers, Bengals. Let's do that next, Bob, shall we, on the Pomp and Joe show?
Let's do it.
Sounds good. It has a ring to it, doesn't it, the Pomp and Joe show?
But it's really your show.
No, it's
I'm
not.
Just
Stop
a caddy.
Saying that.
I'm a caddy for you.
You're not a caddy. You're
what
the
would
main
you like,
guy.
A 5-iron?
Yes.
Ask me a question. You're 186.
I'm 150 yards out. The wind is blowing left to right. And it's a very small green that sloped toward the back. What club should I use?
Driver.
A driver? Are you insulting me on my driving
capabilities?
No, I
would say you'd get there eventually. That's what I would tell you.
I'll tell you this much. I've been using this 7 wood, I think it is, a 7 fairway wood for everything.
Oh, it's the best.
I drive with it.
Those hybrid clubs take up what a 3 and 4 iron would have done for you in the past. It's hard
unbelievable,
to hit those
clubs. Bob. Plus, I'll chip onto the green from a few feet off.
Have you been watching Bryson DeChambeau try to hit a hole-in-one over his house?
No, but we're having some discussions of doing that at a certain establishment soon. I'll tell you more
Austin,
about that
it,
later.
Right?
Oh, I've seen it.
Yesterday, one was
everyone.
In the hole and it popped back out.
Yeah, he's gotten very, very close.
But let me ask you something. It's so amazing to watch a guy do the same shot over and over. It doesn't change.
Wait, what's he doing?
He has a big house in Dallas. It's all glass.
Yeah.
And he's had a little challenge. He's been very good on social media about creating buzz about his stuff. So he has this mat. He's hitting it over his house. He has a green in the back of his house. And he said, okay, this is my hole-in-one challenge. How many days will it take? Day one, I get one shot. Day two shots. Day three. He's on day 14 now. He's going to get 14 shots. Yesterday, on day 13, Every single shot was right, Austin, like right around the hole. One went into the hole and bounced out of the hole.
What?
And he hasn't had a hole in one.
How many yards does he figure it is?
It's like a wedge shot. It's like 130 yards.
Yeah, just straight over the house.
Straight over the house.
Straight drop over.
It's pretty interesting, actually.
And even me, someone who doesn't really do well golfing at all, is interested in it.
Now I am, too, and I'm going to look it up right now.
Yeah, you'll find it interesting.
Anyway. I need Bob to teach me how to golf.
Fan Twitter, Brought, that's a good guy to have.
I know.
He's a very nice
guy. Give me some good lessons.
I'm responsible for what you see here with Joe Starkey.
I know.
Having dropped off clubs.
Well, you're responsible for the clubs.
And shoes to his house.
I don't know if you want to take responsibility for what's happened to me on the course, Bob.
We all go through struggles, Joe.
I know.